The man with the rubber boots stepped into the elevator behind me, but I didn't see him at first. I smelled him, though, the pungent odor of smoke and cheap wine and life on the street without soap. We were alone as we moved upward, and when I finally glanced over, I saw the boots, black and dirty and much too large. A frayed and tattered trench coat fell to his knees. Under it, layers of foul clothing bunched around his midsection, so that he appeared stocky, almost fat. But it wasn't from being well-fed. In the wintertime in D.C., the street people wear everything they own, or so it seems. He was black and aging. His beard and hair were half-gray and hadn't been washed or cut in years. He looked straight ahead through thick sunglasses, thoroughly ignoring me, and making me wonder for a second why exactly I was inspecting him. He didn't belong. It was not his building, not his elevator, not a place he could afford. The lawyers on all 8 floors worked for my firm at hourly rates that still seemed obscene to me, even after 7 years. Just another street bum in from the cold, happened all the time in downtown Washington. But we had security guards to deal with the riffraff. We stopped at 6, and I noticed for the first time that he had not pushed a button, had not selected a floor. He was following me. I made a quick exit, and as I stepped into the splendid marble foyer of Drake and Sweeney, I glanced over my shoulder just long enough to see him standing in the elevator, looking at nothing, still ignoring me. Madame Devier, one of our very resilient receptionists, greeted me with her typical look of disdain. "Watch the elevator," I said. "Why?" "Street bum. You may want to call security."
"Those people,"
she said in her affected French accent. "Get some disinfectant, too." I walked away, wrestling my overcoat off my shoulders, forgetting the man with the rubber boots. I had non-stop meetings throughout the afternoon, important conferences with important people. I turned the corner and was about to say something to Polly, my secretary, when I heard the first shot. Madame Devier was standing behind her desk, petrified, staring into the barrel of an awfully long handgun held by our pal, the street bum. Since I was the first one to come to her aid, he politely aimed it at me, and I too became rigid. "Don't shoot," I said, hands in the air. I'd seen enough movies to know precisely what to do.
"Shut up,"
he mumbled with a great deal of composure. There were voices in the hallway behind me. Someone yelled, "He's got a gun!" And then the voices disappeared into the background, growing fainter and fainter as my colleagues hit the back door. I could almost see them jumping out the windows.